If it doesn't. Mission.
You're listening to This Week in Radio News. Radio news about radio waves, radio art, and more. I'm Tom Rowe, your host, and we'll travel across the ether to hear what's going on in radio news. This is Tom Rowe with the radio news about radio waves. John Anderson in DIY Media reports that Federal Communications Commission Chairman Tom Wheeler just about admitted recently that the agency can do nothing about the proliferation of pirate radio stations in the New York City metropolitan area. While the FCC is cutting back employment at its enforcement division nationwide, it is adding one position in New York City, where as many as 100 pirate stations may be on the air. In late June, FCC Commissioner Mike O'Reilly convened a working group including the National Association of Broadcasters, New York State Broadcasters Association, New Jersey Broadcasters Association, National Public Radio, and others to stop New York City radio pirates. On July 27th, Wheeler sent letters to New York and New Jersey's members of Congress, formally replying to a previous letter from the congresspeople about the problem. According to the letter, the FCC, quote, has issued more than 100 pirate radio enforcement actions, unquote, this year, a claim that Anderson says is not reflected in the FCC's public data. Quote, given the facts, it is clear that the pirate radio problem cannot be solved by enforcement alone, unquote, Wheeler writes. He announces the creation of a, quote, inter-bureau task force, unquote, to, quote, develop policy and enforcement options to address the issues, unquote, with four options listed. Quote, the revision of the Communications Act to provide for aiding and abetting liability for landlords and other parties that provide material support to pirate radio operators, or the identification of trade associations and law enforcement entities to educate landlords, advertisers, and others about the unlawful nature of pirate operations and develop best practices, or release of a policy statement enforcement advisory that could be shared with these groups and help channel state, local, and federal resources on pirates, and fourth, an additional FCC state and local enforcement options for reducing pirate activities. Anderson predicts a sweep of the New York metropolitan area by the Enforcement Bureau's new Tiger Teams, similar to sweeps in 1997 through 98 in the face of the micro radio movement. You can read the full story in DIY Media, and note John Anderson is on Wavefarm's board. David Oxenford in the Broadcast Law blog reports that the Federal Communications Commission is asking for comments from the public on a rulemaking proposal that would allow low-power FM stations to operate commercially and also be owned by local small businesses. The proposal would also give low-power FM stations primary status, protecting them against being displaced by a subsequent move of a full-power station or new service from a new full-power FM radio station. The proposal would also let nonprofit groups operate more than one low-power FM station. Currently, only nonprofit groups can apply for low-power FM stations, and they can only get one station per group. A separate, different recent proposal would allow low-power FM stations to increase power to 250 watts. Comments on the first proposal are due on August 30th at fcc.gov. Matthew Lazar at Radio Survivor writes that Azerbaijani radio host Khadija Ismailov is in jail in Azerbaijan for doing her job as a journalist. While convicted of, quote, running an illegal business, tax evasion, abuse of power, and embezzlement, unquote, she was really sentenced to 7.5 years in jail for reporting on corruption within the administration of Azerbaijan President Ilham Aliyev. Ken Roth, executive director of the Human Rights Watch, issued a statement calling the situation an outrage.
Today's harsh sentence of Khadija Ismailova is an utter outrage. Khadija is a real human rights hero. She's an investigative journalist who has had the courage to expose government corruption, to look at the government's seizure of land for vanity things like the Eurosong contest, and of course to push for the liberation of other political prisoners. Her trial was an utter joke. Her defense was severely curtailed, and the government, knowing it couldn't even stand up to scrutiny, packed the courtroom with its supporters so that independent observers couldn't come in. Predictably, you get her conviction.
Quote, I might be in prison, but the work will continue, unquote, she vowed at her sentencing. Ismailova had reported that Azerbaijan government awarded rights to a large gold field to the president's family. Her reports have been published in Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty, and at Truthdig. You can read this full story at Radio Survivor. Federal Communications Commission, after cutting back its enforcement division earlier this summer, last week instituted, quote, enhanced procedures for public safety and industry interference complaints, unquote. The new process is supposed to be a streamlined, quick and easy way for the commission to respond to problems, even with 13 fewer field offices around the country. Ashley Ludlow at the Communications Law blog isn't so sure the plan will work. Quote, incoming complaints will be categorized as either high, medium, and low priorities, but the notice doesn't shed much light on how any particular complaint will be assigned to one or another category, unquote. For instance, pirate radio operations that do not interfere with any other stations might be in one category, and a pirate radio station that is interfering with a news station as a storm approaches a community might be in another. Or not, Ludlow writes, as the notice is unclear. Field office representatives will respond to high-priority complaints within one calendar day of filing, medium-priority complaints within 2 business days, and low-priority complaints within 5 business days. They'll respond and resolve are 2 very different words, she notes. Ludlow writes that if a complainant felt unsatisfied, they can then appeal first to the regional director, next to the field director. But again, what happens next is unclear. Ludlow says that the lack of details in these new regulations does not breed confidence in the new complaint system at the FCC. This is Tom Rowe for Wavefarm Radio and WGXC. Michelle Helms, Professor Emerita at University of Wisconsin-Madison, reports at the Antenna blog that the Radio Preservation Task Force, a unit of the Library of Congress's National Recording Preservation Board, holds its first national conference February 25th through 27th next year in Washington, D.C. Professor Patty Scannell of the University of Michigan and Sam Brilowski, former head of the Library of Congress's Recorded Sound Division, are among the keynote speakers. The National Recording Preservation Board began in 2014 coordinating, quote, a nationwide effort to identify major collections of radio recordings and other materials that will help to raise cultural awareness of America's rich tradition of radio-based sound work and make it accessible to future generations, unquote. The group now includes more than 130 media studies scholars and over 350 affiliate archives, collections, and radio-producing organizations across the U.S. and Canada. NPR, the Pacifica Radio Archives, the Smithsonian Center for Folklife and Cultural Heritage, the Association for Cultural Equity, and the Alan Lomax Archive, the Paley Center for Media, the Prometheus Radio Project, the Media Ecology Project, the Studs Terkel Archive, and the Third Coast International Audio Fest are among the involved. Next up, we talk to Quintron, whose Weather Warlock full band tour begins the end of September. He's going up the East Coast with his Weather Warlock synthesizer, which takes input from the local weather conditions, from the sun and the moon, the temperature, wind conditions, and more, to make sounds, and it's hooked up outside at each performance. Quintron from New Orleans is touring with Gary Wrong and Aaron Hill and also playing with local musicians at each stop on the tour. We got Quintron to phone in recently and talk about the Weather Warlock synthesizer.
And it's sort of like Sun Ra meets doom metal or something. I don't know how to describe it, but it's very heavy, no vocals, drony, riffy.
And we're talking with Quintron about his Weather Warlock project, playing the Weather Warlock synthesizer that uses the rain, wind, temperature, moon, lightning, and other weather effects to make sounds?
Yeah, wind speed, velocity, moisture, UV, which is basically, you know, intensity of sunlight, temperature, and that's it.
And so are all the shows you're playing outdoors?
Well, the sensors sit, some of them are completely outdoors. All of them must have a space for the weather sensors to sit outdoors so that they can accept signals from the heavens. But in some cases, like we're playing inside and then we run the wire, there's a 100-foot cable that goes to the weather sensors and they sit just outside. But it's ideal if the whole thing is outside and people can kind of see what's going on.
So basically the weather, that whatever that day is, will affect the performance, actually
yeah.
Becomes the performance.
I'll be the only one there praying for rain. Not ruinous rain. Mild rain and extreme cloud coverage would be some very interesting sonic output. Because when the UV fluctuates on a really cloudy day, those sensors just go bonkers. It's great. Yeah, that bright, sunny, still day is the most boring sounding day you could ever ask for. So the most perfect, idyllic summer day or fall day is not going to sound good. We want some action.
And what got you into trying to harness the weather for sound? Have you used this in a hurricane yet, I guess, is the New Orleans question you probably get asked too often.
New Orleans, of course I have, yeah. It's been through two hurricanes, one proper hurricane, and several tropical storms.
And
you know, the weather is something that it figures very prominently as a character in everyone's lives in New Orleans and in many places in the world, of course, but maybe more so here in tropical environments and places that are where the populace is literally threatened potentially on a yearly basis with you know, pretty extreme weather events. It's on your mind. And I've been building synthesizers for years and years and years, and it's all about sensors and activation. And it's been in, I can't give you a single nutshell reason why I did this. It's just.
There wasn't a slap your forehead moment?
It was a slap your forehead moment, but then I didn't do it probably for about 5 years. I didn't act on it.
Because it's a lot of work, probably.
Yeah. Without going into too much detail, I found myself with a lot of free time all of a sudden. And I was like, well, now is the time to get on this project and make it happen. Because like anything else, any other invention or anything like this, it's a process of trial, error, failure, and rebuild. And that takes, you know, months or years to really get you someplace. And I'm certainly think that there's further to go with this project and new sensors and refining the sensors. But I'm very happy with the point that it's at now.
So how did the hurricane compare to just a normal rainstorm?
Oh, I'd have to play it for you, but the main thing is that the wind sensors are moving very, 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 very fast, and they start creating sounds that you would never hear on a regular, even windy day. They're going so fast that you can't even hear the pulsations anymore. And the closest thing I can compare it to is like the sound of like a herd of angry ducks. It's not relaxing. But neither is a hurricane, so it shouldn't be.
Do the sounds try to approximate the sound that they're input?
Sort of. No, sort of. You can kind of. The only oscillator that I built to mimic the actual physical phenomenon is rain. And that one I built to, it's all electronic, but I built it to sound like rain so that you would know, you know, when it's raining outside, it kind of makes a sound. But the other ones aren't really, you know, temperature doesn't sound like anything.
The moon?
The moon doesn't sound like anything. The moon in and of itself doesn't have a
a instruments on it, right? It can be melodic as well, but the theremin was really developed to help to emulate the human voice more than anything else. Not as a replacement, but sort of as a lyrical singing instrument. And the drum buddy was developed as a rhythmic accompaniment and a rhythm maker more than to be a lyrical songstress.
And if someone is
tries to sound that way. What way to be more specific? It's a lot of fun. Your shows are great fun in many different ways, and then also like weirdly experimental, and that you can dance to. Those two phrases don't get talked about too often.
Well, I've always approached electronic music in a way that I kind of like it to be on the brink of collapse at all times, and not to let it control me. I like to control. That's why another reason I built the trombone. It's an electronic instrument that you can really almost squish with your hands and squeeze life out of it, as opposed to just pressing a button and letting it do what it does. That's why I love the Hammond organ. For anybody that's ever played a real B3 that has an electronic instrument in it as a synthesizer, there's a feeling of pressing an old organ, especially an old tone wheel organ or a Hammond organ, that is really like you're mashing something and getting something back from it. And my approach to making electronic music has always been to go at it that way rather than to set patterns loose and kind of follow them. Like the drum machine that I use is the simplest of simple drum machines, and it doesn't sequence, it doesn't play songs that I follow. It's basically just boom chick, boom chick, boom chick, and then you can turn it on and off. You can put breaks in wherever you want. So it leaves a lot of room for error, collapse, experimentation, and fun, I guess.
Well, the B3 sort of has this breathy kind of, it feels like an air organ almost, that you can, feel it. And your electronics.
If you've ever touched one, it really, it's not what you would think of as an electronic instrument, but it completely is. But it's, that art of building those types of electronic musical instruments is something that, because they're so full of flaws and noise and clicks and unwanted, not wanted by me, and this is their flaws are the very things that have made them last forever and ever, and become like a staple of the sound palette of music making to this day.
Preceding show was recorded at Wave Farms WGXC in the Hudson Valley in New York State.